President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour. We've got a great show lined up for this evening. We actually have two guests. We're waiting to make contact with our second guest, but they're a team, and so we're bringing on board for the second time on Evident Footprints two forensic economists that have been doing a tremendous amount of research behind many of the anomalous plane crashes that have been occurring around the world, especially here in the United States, and the events that occurred on 9/11/2001. With us again from HawksCafe.com, the incredible researcher David Hawkins. David, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Hello, Don. Nice to be with you.
Well, we're going to be waiting with bated breath as to whether or not we're able to make contact with Field. But in the meantime, I know you have quite a bit of information to share. For our listening audience that's tuning in for the first time and hearing this information, you have been tracking financial activities and have come up with some really startling information as to who has been a major player behind the scenes in situations, as I just described, like 9/11 and some of the more recent plane crashes that have occurred in various parts of the world, including here in the United States. And I wanted to give you the opportunity for the new listeners to give a little bit of your background so they understand your credentials.
Well, thank you, Don. Yeah, I have a background in engineering. I was at Cambridge University in the 60s, working in the power industry. Then I worked in the international oil industry in firefighting and quite a lot of familiarity with explosives and artificial intelligence, which is really a science of trying to take data from the subsurface reservoir rock and interpret it on a computer or with the assistance of a computer. This was with a company called Schlumberger. And then just out of interest, Schlumberger's directors around the 9/11 period included John Deutsch, the disgraced director of the CIA, who allegedly stole 14,000 pages of top secret CIA information and shared it with parties unknown. And he was a director of Schlumberger and the director of Citigroup and Raytheon, and another very interesting individual director of Schlumberger was Jamie Gorelick, who was on the 9/11 commission, and she was vice president of Fannie Mae that was in the business of selling fake debt into the mortgage industry in the ghettos. And so between them, they were directly contributed to the collapse in the subprime mortgage market. After leaving Schlumberger, I started my own company in the UK, developing software for connecting data from oil fields around the world. And then I came to British Columbia in Canada in 92 and discovered corruption on a scale I'd really experienced very few places in the world. And incidentally, if your listeners would like to tune into CaptainSherlock.com, they can see some of the books that Field McConnell and myself have written and some of the videos that indicate our research into the role of white-collar criminals in the 9/11 attack, in particular KPMG Consulting, which is the big consulting part of the KPMG audit and tax firm. And your listeners may be interested to remember that around 2006, KPMG paid $454 million to keep its partners out of jail for abusive tax shelters in an apparent conspiracy with the Sidley Austin law firm that used to employ a woman by the name of Michelle LaVaughn Robinson, who we should all know his name now is Michelle Obama. So I've become, with Field, extremely interested in the role of the Sidley Austin law firm and KPMG as the white-collar criminals, if you will, behind the white-collar aspects of the 911 attack and, as you point out, some of the plane crashes that we looked at recently, including the one in Buffalo, I think the 13th of February, where a turboprop Dash aircraft made by Bombardier came down, and Sidley Austin handles all the lease agreements for Bombardier. So perhaps it's worth just taking an opportunity to describe a fraud that was developed and structured by one of Sidley Austin's first clients, Equitable Life Insurance of the United States, which in 1868, would you believe, 140 years ago, introduced a concept called Tontine Insurance. Tontine Insurance is an annuity arrangement where people who join the Tontine, they make a contribution of money, which is then loaned onwards into some public project or possibly including an invasion of the country. And the members of the Tontine agree that they'll pay themselves an annuity, perhaps every 5 or 10 years, out of the funds handled by the Tontine, but all the profits will stay in the Tontine to be collected by the sole survivor. So in 1906, well, this particular model built Equitable Life into the world's largest life insurance company, and the law firm that structured these deals was Sidley Austin of Chicago. In 1906, the practice was banned in the States because, obviously, there is a moral hazard of each member of the Tontine wanting to kill the other in order to be a sole survivor. So what Sidley Austin appeared to do with Equitable Life is start making these Tontine organizations international. And they appear to have gone into business with the Royal Bank of Canada, the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank in London, and the bank that would become called BNP Paribas in Paris, that handled, incidentally, the oil for food program. So fast forward to the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Recent work that we've done suggests that Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald to distract attention from a Tontine operated by Sidley Austin, where the idea is that in order to trigger the insurance from a victim and the payment of a debt, the Tontine has to deliver what are rather offensively called a snuff film that proves an insured individual has been killed, and the money is then collected to pay off the debt. Now, it's very interesting that in 1950s, David Rockefeller set up the NBC studios in the 30 Rockefeller Center in New York, that went into a partnership with the CIA and MI6, the external services of the British intelligence, in order to carry out special operations around the world, theoretically during the Nazis, 39-45, the war, and against the Nazis. But if you look at some of these contract hits, it would appear that NBC Studios had embedded assassins in its news crews. And you can see they have the perfect cover because they can go, for example, into embedded with American troops as they advance on Germany or Berlin, but they've got an excellent alibi at the same time to arrange for contract killings of possibly American officers during that movement forward.
Mm-hmm.
So what Rockefeller had said, and I think he said it relatively recently, and perhaps in 91, he said that the world is ready to move towards a supranational government of world bankers and an intellectual elite, which is what we're seeing now.
Mm-hmm. So when you mention, David, when you mention journalists, are you speaking of not necessarily anchormen, but field reporters like maybe Pierre Salinger or Salinger? Pierre Salinger, most would pronounce his name.
Absolutely. Now, my memory may not be perfect here, but it turns out that the NBC reporter who was killed in that Jonestown massacre
mm-hmm.
was also in Vietnam in the fall of Saigon, and they called him, I think his name was Harris, was it Don Harris? And they called him Mr. Lucky, because he was seen to be able to avoid bullets and landmines. But very interestingly, he was systematically, it would appear, recording snuff films of fragging of American officers to be sent back to the United States to help undermine support for American successes in the war after the Tet Offensive, because after the Tet Offensive, to all intents and purposes, the Viet Cong had been destroyed, and the North Vietnamese regular army had been destroyed by the United States and its South Vietnamese allies.
Mm-hmm.
So this was 1968, and if you look at the statistics, this notion of fragging, which I believe was done in conjunction with the recording of snuff films to undermine American support for the war and relieve the pressure on the communists. There was no fragging attacks in 1968, and there was 192 in 1969.
Wow.
And in 1969, where was Bill Clinton? Any ideas?
Oh, let's see. Would he have been in England by any chance?
Moscow.
Oh, Moscow. Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember hearing something about that.
Yeah. Debriefing the KGB on various methods to undermine the success of the United States in Vietnam. And in Vietnam, in Hanoi, there was a man who had earned the nickname the Songbird. That is John Songbird McCain. And he earned the nickname Songbird because he was systematically telling the North Vietnamese and the KGB interrogators everything he knew about American military tactics that could be used by anti-aircraft batteries to shoot down more U.S. soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that John McCain may have been caught up in a tontine in the Hanoi Hilton, which is basically saying, we can arrange for you to live, but some of your colleagues are going to have to die.
Yeah. Now, I had written somewhat about McCain's genealogy, the whole family. In fact, believe it or not, it traces back directly to Prince Albert Edward, who became Edward VII, and whose son later became George V. And McCain, the McCain clan was, from what I could tell, was inserted into the U.S. Navy straight out of the British Merchant Marine. I had tracked the family down under the name of McCann. Now, it's interesting that you bring up this issue about Vietnam, because I had talked to some soldiers that had the pictures of McCain in hotels and getting out of military official military vehicles in plain clothes, going into restaurants, in the company of prostitutes.
Yeah, and I've heard that.
Yeah, and his let's say his wet start at the Oriskany on the USS Oriskany, which resulted in multiple deaths on that ship, were responsible for having him removed from that ship for his own safety. The crew would have taken him out for sure. On the basis of what they knew had happened. So I mentioned that because what you're saying is not at all absurd. I think we have Field with us now, actually. Field, are you with
evening.
Us?
Yes, I am, via Skype.
Oh, great. You sound crystal clear, too. Welcome to Evident Footprints.
Sorry I'm late.
That's okay. We're talking, David's explaining how Bill Clinton was in Moscow, and we just had brought up the topic of John McCain and his Songbird nickname that he earned while in Vietnam. And I was relating to him that I had done quite a bit of research and came up with some really interesting things. Now, I don't know if you heard this at all, either one of you, David or Field, that when all of these prisoners were released, and we'll speak in general terms, from the Hanoi Hilton, they were put on a plane, and eventually there was an attempt to serve 17 of them with arrest warrants for committing treason. And Lyndon Johnson stymied that. He put a stop to it. But they had ample evidence that they had all, McCain and 16 other of his men had committed treason by giving away all of those secrets that you just described, David. Were you familiar with that at all?
Yeah, this is fascinating because fast forward about McCain, it would appear that Sidley Austin was a principal law firm advisor to the Keating Five,
mm-hmm.
in the savings and loan scam.
Yeah,
where they're basically selling fake debt, and selling fake debt is when you offer to the ghetto, like with the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac scams, or the Small mm-hmm. Business Administration.
Yeah.
You offer a loan for them to do something, knowing that they can't pay back in cash because they're never going to make enough money to pay it back. But you might require a favor, such as whacking someone on whom you've got life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Sidley Austin, just going back to that 1868 and the banning in 1906, mm-hmm. has probably had 140 years of structuring tontine insurance frauds, where the money that goes into the pool is used to make a fake debt, a fake loan or an unlawful debt
mm-hmm.
to a party who can't pay back except by dying themselves or whacking someone who's an enemy of the tontine.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest and first client after the practice was made unlawful or illegal in the United States in 1906 was in the period 1931 to 1951, when there was a dispute over the estate of Edith Rockefeller, the daughter of John D. Rockefeller.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears that David Rockefeller used Sidley Austin to develop a tontine insurance scheme for the descendants of John D. Rockefeller, such that there would be no tax and the money would be rolled on to the next generation and the next generation through the process of killing the enemies of the Rockefellers, who stood between Rockefeller and his dreams of the supranational government with the destruction of sovereignty for the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense, and I've tracked some similar things like that, so I'm inclined to agree with you. And let's bring
and
up.
I'd like that. Go ahead. Sorry.
If we could just briefly bring up the issue of the attack on the USS Liberty, which occurred in 1967. they had none other than Admiral John McCain Jr., or John Sidney McCain III's father, as the head of the Atlantic Fleet and conducting that investigation there. So this family is tied in with this corruption. Now, do you suspect that maybe the Liberty itself was also a Tontine scam as well?
Yeah, because you see, if you go back to or fast forward to 2000, on the 12th of October 2000, the most advanced frigate in the U.S. Navy, the USS Cole, actually went into Aden Harbor and docked, which was totally against any advice from real intelligence, simply because Aden Harbor wasn't secure.
Mm-hmm.
And it would appear that a remotely controlled vessel with explosives was guided in between the dock and the USS frigate, and it was just aft of the magazine, and it blew a hole in the side and killed, I can't remember how many sailors. But just a few days before, a company here in British Columbia that was interfacing with a concept developed by Cisco called the Virtual Pentagon had sold an interface that allowed the enemies of the United States, and I believe that includes the Sidley Austin law firm, to break into the codes used by the USS Cole. So they tracked it into Aden Harbor, and it would appear they actually were able to, through remote control, probably through satellites, guide in this vessel with explosives, and they nearly blew the USS Cole into 100 pieces. So I don't see a lot of difference between the attack on the USS Cole and the attack on the USS Liberty you mentioned.
Yeah. Well,
could I add something?
Yeah, yes, please. I was going to invite you into this conversation field.
No, that's okay. I'm the thinker. Dave just has a better voice. What I want to point out is it's not just nautical shipping like the Liberty and the Cole. David, who's got the better voice, might want to explain to you the possibility that the shuttle that was downed over Texas, leaving a very long debris field, that had some interesting stuff in the left wheel well, as I recall. But David likes to talk, so I'll turn that over to him. But we're dealing with, you know, vast crime. And I want to point out also, I just sent you the treason charges against McCain that I previously sent you on February 23rd. So, David, do you have anything to say about that shuttle that came down?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was around the 1st of February 2003. Correct me if I'm wrong. But again, a few days before that, McDonnell Detweiler, which was building the... It's a kind of complex concept. They call it the Tontine algorithm, which is an interface to Cisco's virtual private networks. And what that allows you to do, if during a war game or an exercise like landing the shuttle through remote control, you want to arrange for a group of conspirators to communicate amongst themselves without the knowledge of the people who believe they're doing the legitimate task of landing the shuttle, which is done automatically, they need a Tontine algorithm. And the only people who would have had access to that software, which obviously is absolutely fundamental to the security of the United States, Field and I know the name. It's a man called Bruce McConnell, who was the head of encryption for the last years of the Reagan White House, right through to the Clinton era. But interestingly enough, Cisco appears to be able to provide links to explosive devices that are triggered through the virtual private network and the Tontine algorithm. And when they looked at the debris from the left wheel arch, they found on reinforced carbon-carbon panel number 8 globules of iron, pure iron, in an environment that suggested the use of atomized aluminum powder and iron oxide, which is a pyrotechnic reaction like thermite. So we think McDonnell Detweiler provided the Tontine algorithm that allowed someone to send an ignition signal to a thermite device planted in the wheel arch that brought the shuttle down. So, and again, you can see that if you have the ability to take out pontoon insurance on the shuttle, and the shuttle has been launched with debt, if you see what it means, someone sold it, you know, financed it with a loan, then you can recover the loan by taking out life insurance on the people inside the shuttle and the vessel itself. And we think that's what Sidley Austin has been doing through, right back through the Clinton era and the killing of JFK.
Yeah. Now, what comes to mind is, I think it was the Challenger explosion in, what was it, January of 96?
86.
Yeah, that was a slip of the tongue there.
1986.
Yeah. That appears to have been something other than O-rings, I would guess.
Oh, yeah. And there's another fascinating... The Mumbai attack of Thanksgiving Day was a very sophisticated three-phase amphibious attack with a mothership, Zodiacs, and so on. And they discovered Thuraya satellite phones, and the Thuraya satellites were launched by Boeing out of Chicago on the Zodiacs, indicating that the attackers had used Thuraya communications. And they traced the account used by the attackers to a New Jersey Western Union account. Now, Western Union is a Sidley client. And the murder-for-hire prescription of the racketeering laws is anyone who uses or travels on interstate or foreign commerce or induces the victim to use or travel on interstate and foreign commerce is guilty, for the purposes of murder for hire, is as guilty as the shooter, i.e. the death sentence, if convicted. So we think that Sidley Austin has been structuring Western Union accounts, perhaps since the late 19th century, in a partnership with Equitable Life, the world's largest life insurer, for the purposes of tontine snuff films.
Yeah, now the victims in these cases don't necessarily have to be aware that these policies are out there.
No, they can be third-party victims, or they can be members of the tontine, because, remember, the tontine itself, in a sense, it's bound to... Its ties of loyalty to each other extend to the possibility that one of the tontine members has inside information that enables them to eliminate the others. So if you look at Adlai Stevenson or some of the lawyers at Sidley Austin, well, one of them back in the 30s was the editor of the Harvard Law Review. Well, we know who a more recent editor, was the 1990 editor of the Harvard Law Review, who also was at Sidley Austin, was one guy who was born Barry Swatero.
Alias Barack Obama.
Alias Barack Obama, who is, I suggest, the sole survivor of a tontine.
My goodness.
Arranged by Sidley Austin, who has eliminated his competition either by having them whacked or bankrupting them, because you can default on your obligations to the tontine either by dying, in which case your life insurance proceeds go into the pool, or by going bankrupt, in which case your assets are liquidated and transferred to the pool. So all those Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and Small Business Administration loans, I think we should put in the category of fake debt sold by Eric Holder, a director of Freddie Mac, sold by Jamie Gorelick, vice president of Fannie Mae, or sold by Field's sister, Christine Marcy, the chief operating officer of the Small Business Administration.
Yeah. Now, when you consider this and take all of this into account and then compare this, what comes to mind are the ricin attacks in Japan, where some 5,000 people died in the subway trains, and then or the high speed rails. I don't know that they were all subway. And then the Bali nightclub bombing, the Madrid train bombing, the London bombings in on 7/7. You know, they even picked these dates, these Illuminati dates, to carry out their black magic rituals.
And the Pakistan cricket team just recently.
Yeah, yeah. And we've had events that have occurred in South America as well. Some foiled attempts on some occasions. I think there was one in Mexico City that was thwarted. This is a pretty devious and sinister and evil group of people. These people are just after money and nothing else. And as I mentioned,
they're after power, Don. Remember,
yeah, yeah.
Because the sole survivor thing is ultimately at the top of the heap. What's to me absolutely fascinating is the sole survivor in the White House of a career, relatively short career at City Austin, is probably Michelle LaVaughan Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was there from 1988 to 91, but the person who trained her from 84 to 88 was Bernadine Dorn, the leader of the Weatherman terrorist underground movement.
Uh-huh.
Allegedly the most dangerous woman in America. Now, they said of the Weatherman movement, it was a nationwide revolutionary network to bomb and to kill. Well, is there any evidence it was ever dismantled?
Yeah.
It's still there, though.
Yes.
And it's stronger than ever, and its sole survivor is in the White House, and her name is not Barack Obama, it's Michelle LaVaughan Robinson.
Yes.
David, can I jump in?
Sure.
Yeah, I just want to point out something that happened real time while we've been on the air. Either or both of you may be aware of who Dr. Orly Tates is,
yes.
Attorney. I just got an email from her, and I sent it to both of you so you can review it while you're talking on the radio. And I responded to her question to me. She wanted to know what the relationship was with our civil case, Hawks Cafe versus the Global Guardians and Obama. And my response, I'll quote it, you can read it, I sent it to you. It says, Obama and wife have a relationship to those who perpetrated 9/11, hence the lawsuit. So she wanted a very brief answer, and I just gave you a brief answer, and I think David had prefaced my brief answer with a fairly lengthy answer, but these people are into it up to their eyeballs, and we know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you see, what's fascinating, Don, is that the man's name was Don Harris. He was a news correspondent for NBC Studios, which, if you recollect, was set up in 30 Rockefeller Plaza by David Rockefeller as a front, I think we can argue, for special operations by the CIA and MI6.
Mm-hmm.
So what that gave Rockefeller was the ability, and Sidley Austin, Rockefeller is Sidley Austin's client. What it gave Sidley Austin and Rockefeller the ability to do was to mobilize a news crew into an area and arrange for the snuff film to be recorded of a Pontine target that would legitimize the payment of insurance on the target back into the Pontine pool.
Mm-hmm.
If you get my drift. So
yeah.
When Don Harris went to Jonestown in Guyana, he went there for the express purpose of recording a snuff film of the suicides, which then became an instrument to intimidate sovereign governments, whether it's Guyana or India or Pakistan or the United Kingdom or Canada or the United States, because what they're really trying to prove is that no sovereign government can protect the safety of its citizens. But
yeah.
That, of course, is bullshit, because what it is they're getting inside through these techniques, like the Cisco virtual private network. They're getting inside the command structure of the United States, and then they're paying or corrupting public servants to kill each other.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm seeing a connection. I brought this up before. I'm seeing a connection in other aspects of the financial markets. Of course, hedge funds and derivatives, which is tying into, and you mentioned Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, it ties into real estate mortgage fraud and just the selling of these contracts where they don't actually even have the collateral in hand. They're, these contracts
fake,
are being...
Fake debt.
Yes, yes. It's the same thing. And I've also determined that as of April 2001, there was a massive influx of Israeli citizens brought in for the purpose of carrying this out. And they're working for some rather prestigious real estate firms and brokerage firms. And their names are in the databases with every alias you can imagine. I mean, they do things like changing the middle initial. I think I mentioned that to you.
You did, but now you just mentioned who pioneered the use of subprime residential mortgage-backed securities and commercial mortgage-backed securities.
Sure.
It was in the late 70s, and it was Sidley Austin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm seeing the connection. And now it's, in fact, I got an email today from someone who's very concerned about the fact that they're trying to bump all of the real estate appraisers out of and mortgage brokers out of commission, and we're talking up to 1 million people across the country so that they can consolidate under three companies. And these companies are the same three companies that I determined were the most involved in the corruption. And they are First American, which is operating a big operation out of Hoffman Estates, Illinois. They're going under First American Capital or First American Credco in Santa Ana, California. They're involved with Countrywide. So all of these home loan scandals are really being orchestrated through criminal impoverishment, intentional criminal impoverishment. And then obviously if these people are being taken out, I'll use that word rather loosely, if they're being murdered on airline flights, they know also that they can go after their real estate assets afterwards, which is just perpetuating this massive takeover on every angle of the finances. And you're right, it's about power.
Yeah, and the people who developed the it's a piece of software called Mindbox, which is automated loan recovery. So it's an artificial intelligence system. As soon as it is triggered with hard evidence that the target has been killed or the asset has been destroyed, such as building number 7 coming down at 520 on 9/11, that is to say, there has to be a method for sending the snuff film over a secure virtual internet or intranet, which is the Cisco technology. Well, that Mindbox automated loan recovery software has been written by McDonnell Detweiler of Richmond, British Columbia, with Countrywide, starting in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, what McDonnell Detweiler, which is just down the road from where I live in British Columbia, it launched the development of the automated loan recovery system called Mindbox in 1992 with Countrywide, which is a way of securing this Tontine scam with the fake debt and getting the money back. In 1993, it started writing the Tontine algorithm, which gave the back door into the virtual Pentagon developed by Cisco for Bruce McConnell, the head of encryption for the Clinton White House. And the third piece of software developed by McDonnell Detweiler, which is absolutely fundamental to 911, was the instrument approach procedure and final approach procedure that allowed you to get inside the flight box of illegally modified planes, illegally modified incidentally by Sidley Austin, as in the case of Bombardier. that allowed you to fly the planes as though they had been physically hijacked by a low-time pilot. But in fact, at the end, in the final trajectory, they were flown around the triaxial gyroscopes into, for example, the Wedge 1 of the Pentagon, which was the U.S. Naval Command Center.
Now, I don't know if you heard this. You mentioned the Buffalo crash. We both did momentarily. The Buffalo plane crash that occurred, I think it was the night of February the 12th. That was broadcasting when they were airing this. And I had just started jotting down some names of the witnesses, and I could connect the witnesses to the same pool. In other words, the witnesses were members of the hit team.
And I'll bet you that included down on the ground, or perhaps with an accompanying Bombardier jet, there was someone taking snuff film, which would prove transmitted back over the secure Cisco networks into the virtual Pentagon, which is a distributed monitoring system. That would be the signal that would trigger the Mindbox automated loan recovery system to take the loan that was used to finance the construction of that plane. And incidentally, that would have been financed through Bombardier Capital. And the law firm that handles the loans from Bombardier Capital is Sidley Austin.
Okay. Now, there, I forget the gentleman's name, but I saw a YouTube video that he had actually given to CNN. So the YouTube video was a rebroadcast of this gentleman, who was a former police officer and a current EMS technician, and he had driven to the area to see if he could be of medical assistance to help the fire department. And he had his camcorder with him, and he shot a hole of the crash site, which hit two houses, not one. The media reported one house. He said definitely two houses were destroyed, and there was a pit underneath the airplane. He described it as a pit, and he was 10 feet from the edge of the pit when he was taking photographs. The tail section of the plane was severed, and one wing was severed. And that's what I saw in the initial film, was the wing. Later on, they stopped showing that wing, which was standing up in the ground and was described as such by several witnesses. He interviewed no fewer than seven witnesses that said the plane was on fire when it came down.
Okay. That probably Phil can tell you about that. That's the Smacksonic, isn't it, Phil?
Well, that's one of the weapons that we've. I'm just right here typing a message, by the way. Somebody on the Pacific Northwest is very interested in what we're doing regarding Boeing, and you'll see it. But yeah, the Smacksonic is one of the suite of weapons that was deployed in these airplanes. And Smacksonic is made somewhere in France, and it looks like thermal or vibrational or noise reducing insulation. However, it's rocket fuel, and when ignited, it goes to 5,800 degrees Fahrenheit, which is one half the heat at the surface of the sun. That's one of the three weapons. The other two, and this is what I'm sending out on an email right now if I sound disjointed, is the Boeing Uninterruptible Autopilot and the QRS-11 gyrochip. And when I say Boeing's Uninterruptible Autopilot, I'm not slamming Boeing. In fact, the email I'm sending right now is suggesting that Boeing was coerced to move to Chicago and to stick these autopilots and QRSs in the airplanes. By the way, the patent for the Boeing autopilot was done in Canada, which I find quite odd, and they didn't announce it until I sued them on February 27th of 07, which I find quite odd because they had this item back in 1995 when they deployed it in some Lufthansa 747-400s. But there's a long answer. Yeah, they've got three things. Smacksonic, which can really light up an airplane before it hits the ground. The QRS-11, which will allow, well, it allowed the attacks of 9/11. Let's leave it at that. And the Boeing Uninterruptible Autopilot, which ostensibly is to protect people from human failures or hijackers intending to fly the airplane in somewhere you don't want it flown, but it's a two-edged sword. Yeah, you can protect passengers or you can kill them, your choice, and it's sort of up to the tontine operators there at Sidley Austin, it appears.
And in each of those three devices, Don, the QRS-11, the Uninterruptible Autopilot, and the Smacksonic Incendiary that's disguised as insulation is made by a French company, Thales, original name was Thompson CSF, which was the preferred weapon supply to Saddam Hussein. Hmm. And Talas, a guy called Serge Chouruk on 911, was on the board of directors of Total, the big French oil company, with the directors of AXA Equitable Life, which is the insurance company that developed the Tontine scam with Sidley Austin. Mm-hmm. So you can see, on 911, they actually had the back door, if you will, to the presidential chain of command for the war game.
Mm-hmm.
With the Tontine algorithm so that they could get inside the presidential chain of command. What they'd done brilliantly was take the only guy in the White House who really would have recognized the early warning signs of a war game that was going bad, which is ex-fighter pilot for the Texas Air National Guard, George Bush, and they put him in a school reading a goat story. So unless, I think Phil can correct me if I'm wrong, unless you know what constitutes odd behavior in a red team, blue team war game, Cheney and the other people, basically their chain of command was interrupted and disrupted. So they would never have seen what was going on.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the conspirators had an internal communication system built in a conspiracy between McDonnell Detweiler, Cisco, and Sidley Austin that allowed them to take these planes and fly them as though they were hijacked. Into command centers, U.S. command centers, and trigger the insurance policies that were used to pay off the loans used to finance the upgrades to, for example, Wedgewell of the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm. Now, we lost Field here, David, so I think Seth will be trying to get him back on the call.
Okay. I have to go in about a few minutes, Don, so I hope you don't mind. Yeah.
No, that's okay. One thing that comes to mind is, and now I remember the gentleman's name from Buffalo, Stephen Wallace had taken this video, and he described the remains of the plane in the bottom of this pit as having been liquefied. It didn't look like a normal plane crash.
Yeah, that'll be consistent with, if you look at the debris field of United 93,
mm-hmm.
And just by out of interest, the film United 93 was made by NBC Universal. We think using snuff film material from the actual accident, combined with a very elaborate facade of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was no way those people wrestled it to the ground. It was actually flying upside down. And the debris field was 8 miles long, so it was actually, we think, they had ignited the rocket field inside the fuselage insulation and had turned it into a rocket.
Yeah. Now, do you think, I mean, when one thinks of an insurance company conspiring in an event where they're going to lose a lot of money, they must be taking a very slim risk. In other words, they've invested this money in such a way that they're getting abnormal returns for it. So that Yes.
So you lend money. That's what Sidley Austin is the largest hedge fund law practice in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It represents the lessors, lessees, insurance and manufacturers and companies like Pratt & Whitney and Boeing and Bombardier.
Mm-hmm.
So they can make a loan to finance a plane, an individual plane, might be a Bombardier business jet or a Boeing 737 or 747 or 757, and then they can secure themselves against the borrower failing to pay that loan back by buying insurance on the hull and the passengers, the crew, and the pilot, and then crashing it, collecting the money, paying off the debt, and bingo.
Yeah. Now I think we have Field back with us now. Welcome back, Field. You weren't on autopilot, I guess.
No. But I find it very, very interesting that immediately after I mentioned Sidley Austin, you guys went quiet. It was probably just a coincidence.
Well, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. This scam, and when you take into account, You know, I got a report today that there had been another $200 trillion stolen out of some secret accounts where this money is just being used as a ping pong ball and bounced about the globe from bank to bank. Are you able to track the types of transactions that are occurring internationally? And the reason I ask this, I find that many of these mortgages are in the hands of foreign banks. You mentioned Paribas in Paris, and then we know Deutsche Bank is a big player in this, possibly UBS. There's missing gold contracts. There's word that the BIS is involved in the swindling of this money. This is massive, massive corruption on a worldwide scale. Are you able to track this?
Well, not really, except that they are simplifying it for us, you see, because the essence of the tontine is there is a sole survivor who's smiling at the end of the day. The rest are dead or bankrupt, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, on the 9/11, there were 12 self-described global custodians. They're now down to 8, right? So it looks very much like a sole survivor tontine is operating for those 8 banks. So it'd be interesting to see where they end up with. But just to remind listeners, and they can see a lot more at CaptainSherlock.com, there are 3 banks outside the United States, Paribas, Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank in London, and the Royal Bank of Canada, Dexia, also in London. And then there are 5 U.S.-based banks that are inside traders on this tontine scam. Mm-hmm. State Street of Boston, BNY Mellon, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Brown Brothers Harriman in New York. And obviously J.P. Morgan Chase is the Rockefeller one, which is very interesting. But perhaps the most interesting of all is Northern Trust of Chicago, which is the bank that owns the mortgage on the Obama mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And also, and I'm really sorry, but I'm going to have to go soon, perhaps I feel to pick up on this, but Northern Trust in the First World War, and remember this was just after the tontine scam had been banned in the States, Northern Trust in Chicago was the alien property custodian, meaning it had custody of all the intellectual property, patents, copyrights, propaganda films, and so on, of the Germans in the First World War. And we think it did the same in the Second World War, including up to such bizarre technologies as Zyklon, which was the gas used in the concentration camps.
Mm-hmm. Well, that probably would connect to Nikola Tesla's inventions as well, because those patents were stolen and given to the Nazis at one point. So,
and Degussa also made the sabotage spore powder that was used for dispersing the anthrax in the letters sent to the Capitol building.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got Degussa was in a partnership with Bombardier, which probably modified the tail cones of its combat support jets for chaff distribution and mm-hmm. anthrax.
Well, David, we promised to let you go early, so
okay.
I want to honor that promise and encourage the listeners to go to your website, hawkscafe.com, and also, while we're at it, go to CaptainSherlock.com, and they can read yours and Field's work.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Don, and bye for now, Field.
We'll see you on the 26th, by the way.
Okay, thank you. I'll write that down.
And Field, you'll stay with us a moment here, I hope.
Yes, I will, and good night to David, and I'll stay with you, Don.
Okay.
Good night, all. Bye.
All right. Good night, David. Well, okay, you missed the first part, so you're going to make up for it now.
Okay.
Are you, when you hear of a plane crash, knowing what you know, obviously there are some crashes that are accidents. That's a certainty. Not everyone is one of these scams, but when you hear of a major plane crashing several feet from the runway or even several miles from the runway, and you look at the fact that the plane has maybe crisscrossed the country or come from another part of the world successfully, and then on approach, they incur all these problems. What do you think? What goes through your mind?
That somebody's trying to terrorize us, but it's also not just on approach. For instance, Colgan 3407 in Buffalo, and you might have just alluded to the Turkish airliner in Amsterdam, where the whole world sees the airplane almost makes it and then ends up having a terrible crash and killing some folks. But also, it's done at the other end. It's done at the departure end of mm-hmm. flights, and I would allude to Atom Air 574, which was on the 1st of January of 07. That was a Boeing 737 vaporized out near Indonesia. And if your listeners Google Atom Air 574, they can read all about it. And it was vaporized exactly in the manner that I had, not myself alone, but acting for David, myself, and the other people contribute to the Hawks Cafe Captain Sherlock effort. We had sent that information on the 11th of December of 2006 to the Airline Pilots Association, to the airline for which I formerly worked, to the Department of Defense at very high levels, including my college classmate from Annapolis, Admiral Tim Keating, who was then the commanding officer of the Northern Command. Northern Command includes NORAD and the Space Command and all that scary stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I put my name on the dotted line, and I wrote to them warning them of this on 11 December 06. They did nothing. On the 1st of January 07, a 737 was vaporized for insurance proceeds, would suggest. Later, after I contacted Mueller, which is the FBI director, Robert Swan Mueller III, I contacted him in a letter. And if you ever doubt any of this, Don, I've got the letters I can send to you, not only the letter, but also the receipt from the FBI receiving the letter. And they got the letter on February 13th of 07, where I suggested that I'd warned them about blowing Boeings, and yet on the Mueller on February 13th, another one blew up on departure. This was Kenya Air, K-E-N-Y-A, Kenya Airways, Flight 507, on the 1st of May of 07. And so these airplanes that seem to have mechanical failures of an explosive nature and kill people, we think there's a common thread, and for instance, the people, including my college classmate, Chick Burlingame, the people who died on 9/11, within days, their survivors were getting million-dollar rewards, mm-hmm. or maybe I should say awards. But the insurance companies that benefited greatly on 9/11 were paying out what appeared to be generous rewards of $1 million plus per head.
Wow. That ends up being a lot of money. Plus, they collect the insurance on the planes themselves, too, I would presume. Okay, now, I'm not hearing you, Field. I don't know if... we lost. Now we lost Field McConnell. Well, that's an abrupt ending to the show, we were about out of time anyway. So I want to thank David Hawkins and Field McConnell for tuning in, joining us on Evident Footprints tonight, in light of their busy schedules. And they will be back with us on the 26th of this month. So if you'd like to hear more information about this really fantastic research that they're conducting, then be sure to tune in on March 26th. In the meantime, special thanks go to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us again tomorrow night for another show. In the meantime, have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.